This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Mos Def first became known as a hip-hop artist, then as an actor. He's doing quite well as both. He's nominated for a Golden Globe for his performance in the HBO movie Something the Lord Made, and he's nominated for a Grammy for his latest CD, The New Danger. In a Rolling Stone review, Tom Moon praised The New Danger for broadening the hip-hop palette without sacrificing or selling out its core ideals. Here's a track from it.
My hometown, break down a little history for you. Myrtle Broadway, Roosevelt Projects, Marcy Projects. Listen, I stepped on the field from no league, just home team. I jumped out the stands and I snatched the rock. With the final seconds dwindling on the clock, most post up to throw up the tie-breaking shot. I put it through the net and let the world's jaw drop. Then fled the arena before they called cops. Tell the players and the coach I wasn't trying to blow spot. The way they was balling made it difficult to watch. I was taught when it's something you could change around. Keep quiet, you got nothing to complain about. You got work to do. I don't know if that worked for you, but that's how most work you do. And my work is personal. I'm a working person. I put in work. I work with purpose. I get it there on the water, air, the surface.
That's Mos Def. He's also been in the films Monsters Ball and The Italian Job. He served as host, music supervisor, and co-executive producer for the HBO series Def Poetry, and was a writer, producer, and actor on the MTV sketch comedy series Lyricist Lounge. He co-starred in the Broadway production of the Pulitzer Prize-winning play Top Dog Underdog. Now Mos Def co-stars in the new film The Woodsman. Kevin Bacon plays Walter, a convicted child molester who has just come out of prison and is trying to fit back into the world, struggling to resist his own impulses. Mos Def plays a police detective who keeps tabs on Walter, dropping in on him occasionally to make sure he's staying away from children. In this scene, the detective is talking to Walter about how despicable child molesters are.
Some of these guys, they walk right in the family's house. Very, very ballsy. I had this one guy, he's on death row, call him Henry. And he's telling me about his last victim. His little cutie named Adele. She's 7 years old. And Adele's mother's got the TV playing so loud, he can hear Letterman telling jokes in the next room. And he walks into Adele's room, puts his hand over her mouth. He says, if you scream, little girl, I'm gonna kill your mother. So, of course, Adele doesn't scream, she doesn't cry, she doesn't make a sound. And Henry takes her by the hand. They walk out the front door. 10 days later, they find Adele's body, what's left of it. You believe in fairy tales?
Fairy tales?
Yeah, like Alice in Wonderland. And,
No.
I asked Mos Def about creating the character of the detective in The Woodsman.
What I was hopefully came across is the jaded, sort of hardened nature that folks in that line of work grow into. People who have to be witness to crime, and there's a certain cynicism and sarcasm. His character is there to create some real tension and pressure, you know, the hand of judgment and punishment. It's like the executioner's, you know, just knocking on your door to be like, you know, well, I could kill you, you know.
I want to congratulate you for being the first person ever to be nominated for both a Grammy Award and a Golden Globe Award at the same time. That leads me to wonder, are there big differences
Am I really
for you?
The first person ever?
Yeah, that according to this press release that I am holding in my hands, it says.
Well, you know what? I got to have that printed up on some business cards and start handing out to major D's at the local eateries because that's pretty good stuff. That's going to be awesome.
So this leads me to wonder, are they two really different worlds? The world of...
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
It's completely, completely different.
Tell me about some of the differences between the world of hip-hop and the world of movies.
Well, hip-hop is just an idiom. You know, I guess I feel the same way about hip-hop that Johnny Cash felt about country music. It's the language or the dominant language of the culture, the generation that I come from. But hip-hop is not all that I do, but it's certainly a touchstone.
What came first for you, acting or music?
It's like, you know, what comes first, your left arm or your right arm? It's like they were, for me, from my experience, they were happening simultaneously. I was a young kid in the choir.
In church or in school?
In church.
Mm-hmm.
And in school. And, you know, when we would go for recess, I'd be in the schoolyard with my friends and my crew, and we'd be rhyming. And that continued all throughout my school career. When I was in class, rehearsing for a play, when it was time for lunch or after school, you know, it was time to write rhymes or listen to music, and it was just that seamless.
I want to play some music from your latest CD, and this is the one that's nominated for a Grammy. It's called The New Danger.
Yes.
And this CD is kind of brings together hip-hop and rock. I thought we'd play a track in which you actually sing. And,
oh, cool.
Yeah, and this is called The Beggar.
Oh, cool. Thank you. I love that song.
Yeah, I like that too. Say a little bit about the song.
Well, it's a song that I wrote with my band Black Jack Johnson. It's really organic. I mean, the drum line. We were just in the studio and Will started playing this really, that pattern. And it started as a jam session, and then everyone started playing together, and then I ran into the vocal booth and just kind of laid the lyrics down in two takes, and that was the entire song. What we looked at it, you know, we listened back to it, it was like, this is awesome. We loved it. I love it just for the simple fact that, you know, Dr. No, who's so well known for his electric guitar work, is playing such beautiful acoustic on the song. And it was really one of those magical moments that, you know, everybody talks about having or wanting to have during a recording, and we had several of those that are on the record, and some that aren't. But that's one that I'm really proud of, and I'm glad you're playing. Thank you.
So are you saying that you didn't write the lyric until the riff was laid down and then you walked in and just did it?
Yeah, I walked in and did it. I mean, as Umi Says was a lot like that. I didn't write down the lyrics for Umi Says. I just I went in and just sang what was, you know, right on my mind and how I was feeling at that time.
Well, let's hear
I'm
sorry.
Yeah, let's hear it. Let's hear it. There's enough yapping about it. Let's hear it, right?
Well, let's hear The Beggar from Mos Def's latest CD, The New Danger.
Woman, you know I love you. Woman, you know just how I feel. Try to tell me that you don't know. When I know you know the deal. Woman, you know I love you.
Woman, you know I care. Hey, you try to say I'm running game. You try to say, baby, you don't play fair. Oh, darling, if there's any doubt in your mind, I want you to be sure.
That's Mos Def from his new CD, The New Danger. Now, you're singing on this as opposed to rapping. And also, this is a song that expresses, you know, love and vulnerability. And I think it's fair to say that there's a lot of rap and hip-hop that isn't really about vulnerability. It's about being hard. So is it... Are you glad to find ways to express a more fuller palette of emotions in your music?
Well, I think there is a lot of vulnerability in hip hop. I just think that the without sounding too much like some sort of righteous rebel or crusader, the powers that be don't let the full spectrum of the culture get airborne to be properly judged and critiqued and appreciated by the wider public. What the corporate involvement in music, period, and particularly in hip hop today, it promotes lifestyle music as opposed to music about life.
For example, there's one of the brochures or press releases for The New Danger is a wanted poster of you.
Yes.
Is that an example of what you're talking about?
Well, that was, you know, I wanted to do, you know, something, you know, visceral. It was sort of tongue-in-cheek. I mean, these in terms of art direction, I had a lot of control over that.
Did you want people to think that you were a gangster?
No, not at all, because... I'm not a gangster, but I do appreciate the energy of things that you can feel first before you can figure them out. Michael Stipe had a great quote. He said, "I wrote this whole album without my brain," and I think there's something to be said for you know, following your instinct and what you really feel on a spiritual level, on an emotional level. And I wanted to put images out that made people have an emotional and visceral relationship with everything. I didn't want people to be indifferent about it. You know, some people will like it, some people will love it, some people will hate it, but I didn't want anybody to be indifferent.
I realize you were kind of in on having the wanted poster to advertise your latest CD, but does that reinforce the whole kind of like gangster lifestyle?
Not at all.
Connection.
I mean,
it was
tongue in cheek with the, you know, I hadn't come out with an album in 5 years, and there was a lot of you know, buzz in the street about, like, you know, we want this record.
Right.
And,
right.
When I did when I did Susan Lori's play After Top Dog at the Public Theater, since I can't say the title of it,
right.
Same media outlets, there was a wanted poster of my character, and
oh,
you know, he was a hunted character, and he was also loved by his mother. So wanted, it appealed to me because it had double meanings. You know, wanted is wanted, you know, loved or feared. And as a black person in America, you know, those dynamics are a daily part of black people's lives. So it's not the reinforcement or the promotion of gangster, you know, lifestyle, anything like that. I thought it was just cool, and you know, to be perfectly frank, just edgy, sexy. You know, I'm not averse to like a dose of boldness or danger. I think it keeps things interesting.
My guest is actor and hip-hop artist Mos Def. He co-stars in the new movie, The Woodsman. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is hip-hop artist and actor Mos Def. He's nominated for a Grammy and a Golden Globe. He co-stars in the new movie, The Woodsman. What was the music you grew up with?
Everything. You know, from church hymns to rock radio to hip hop, of course, to dance hall and reggae and everything. I love music.
What was in your parents' record collection that exposed you to music you might not otherwise have heard?
Well, my parents weren't really huge record collectors. My mother or my father. My dad was a lifelong musician. He played piano, still does. Sang in North Boys Choir. And he and a close friend of his, an educator, had a group called Voices of the Folk and performed all of the, early work songs, the slave songs and the chain gang songs and things like this. And when I was a young boy, you know, I learned all of these songs. And as I got older, you know, they let me perform with them. So everything that I learned about music, my relationship to American music comes from that, you know, because so much of that is really like the genesis of blues and rock and roll and everything else that we know and love and misunderstand today. So I count that as like my musical education of those songs, but I just had a curious mind, you know. I used to go to record shops, and whatever cover art appealed to me, I go, or what titles appealed to me, I'd pick them up and I'd listen, and that's how I, you know.
That's great.
Spent a lot of my allowance.
what's one or two of the more unusual or ridiculous records you ended up buying solely because you like the cover art?
I had great success. I never was really disappointed. I mean, I brought Brilliant Corners
by Thelonious Monk. Yeah, uh-huh.
Because it was that five-sided picture.
Uh-huh.
I bought of course, every Miles Davis album that I could get. And I bought people and names that I was curious about that I hadn't heard. I wanted to know who John Coltrane was. I wanted to know who Miles Davis. I did a lot of research on my own as a teenager, just listening to these people for myself. It's like someone telling you, you got to go get this book. So I went to the library and checked out these books.
What led you toward jazz? Since it sounds like I know you were listening to everything, but certainly what your friends were mostly listening to was probably, rap and hip hop, and that was probably what you're listening to on the radio. So what led you toward jazz?
It just always been around, my uncles and elders in my community would turn it on, and it appealed to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I heard it on the radio, I remember listening to BGO. It appealed to me, the images of those men, like Miles or Dexter Gordon or They just appeal to me. I guess it's the same reason that, you know, people that I picked up on rock and roll, because, you know, Jimi Hendrix is Dylan, or, you know, anyone else that, you know, any of the legends, or, you know, just seminal iconic figures are very attractive spokesmen for the music. So you become interested on the basis that, you know, this collection of personalities or just figures. And that's what jazz was to me. It was this strange, attractive new world for me to go into. And I just dove in. I wanted to know. And I didn't come with any sort of expectations. I didn't know if it would be something that I liked at all, but I gave it a shot, and I loved it.
Mos Def, he co-stars in the new movie The Woodsman. His latest CD is The New Danger.
Major funding.
He'll be back
for
in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with actor and hip-hop artist Mos Def. He co-stars in the new movie, The Woodsman. In addition to his music and acting careers, he co-owns a bookstore in Brooklyn that's also a community cultural center. His co-owner is Talib Kweli, who was also Mos Def's partner in the hip-hop group Black Star. Here they are and their 1998 CD. Reciting my quotes while R&B singers hit bad notes. We rock the boat of thought that my man Lewis statements just provoke. Caught up in conversations of my personal worth. Brought up through endangered species status on the planet Earth. Survival tactics means busting gas to prove you hard. Your firearms are too short to box with God. Without faith, all of that is illusionary. Raise my son, no vindication of manhood necessary. Not strong, only aggressive. Not free. We only license. Not compassionate, only polite. Now who the nicest? Not good, but we'll behave. Chasing after death so we can call ourselves brave. Still living like mental slaves. Hiding like thieves in the night from life. Illusions of oasis making you look twice. Hiding like thieves in the night from life. Illusions of oasis making you look twice. I'm sure that everybody out listening agree that everything you see ain't really how it be. A lot of jokers out running in place, chasing the style. Be a lot going on beneath the empty smile. Most cats in my area be loving the hysteria. Synthesized surface conceals the interior. America, land of opportunity, mirages and camouflages. More than usually, speaking loudly, saying nothing. You confusing me, you losing me. Your game is twisted, want me enlisted. And your usury, foolishly, most men join the ranks cluelessly, but foolishly accept the deception. A lot of performers who are extraordinarily charismatic on stage are actually really shy in public life. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if you were ever like that too, if you were ever...
I was painfully shy.
Really?
As a child. Like, you know, with like physical symptoms, a tightness in the chest, and just it was very, very... shy as a child. And, you know, I wanted to make a connection with, you know, the rest of the world, but I was just, you know, very reserved and not quite sure how to do that. And it's all worked out perfectly. It's, you know, I don't regret a minute of it.
Is there something that you felt you could tap into when you were in front of the mic or on stage that you couldn't quite tap into when you were just on your own without the benefit of the mic or the stage?
Well, the mic didn't even get involved. I mean, you know, I was a child. I was 9 years old, you know. And rhyming was a way for me to interact with my community. And it was a special skill that everybody around me didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
As I got older, I just enjoyed it more. I started getting better at it, and I started to have creative ambitions. I wanted to be able to say in rhymes the things. I wanted to be able, you know, when I was in high school, I started reading a lot of, you know, Chinua Achebe and, you know, Harold Pinter and, you know, Arthur Rimbaud, and, you know, someone to give me a copy of Illuminations, and that had a deep impact on me. Just different authors that I loved, and I wanted to be able to be as descriptive in a rhyme as some of my favorite novelists, the playwrights, were in their work. And that became what I want, my aim, what I wanted to be able to do, to be able to be, you know, stylistic and to be able to flow and be clever and all of those sorts of things that I love about hip hop, and also be literal and have a emotional impact. The same emotional impact that, you know, that writers that I loved had on me.
Now, tell me a little bit more about your childhood, where you grew up. You grew up in Brooklyn?
Yes.
What was the neighborhood like?
Well, I was born in Downstate Hospital in Flatbush, and I was raised in Bedford-Stuyvesant and in Roosevelt Projects. And then when I was around 9 or 10, moved back to Flatbush. And I'm a Brooklyn resident to this day. And I love my city. I feel blessed and lucky to have been born in a magical place on earth called Brooklyn.
What makes Brooklyn magical to you?
Well, I mean, everything. I mean, you know, Walt Whitman working at the Brooklyn Eagle.
Is that a newspaper, the Brooklyn Eagle?
The Brooklyn Eagle was an abolitionist paper in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. It's just rich with history.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the New York experience on a very homegrown level. It's not metropolitan New York, and it's family-based. People who have been there, people who are there, have been there for a very long time. You know, myself included in my family. So it's home in every sense of the word. And it's just got dynamic things. I mean, from the bridge to the Brooklyn Children's Museum, the first children's museum in the world.
I used to go on class trips to that museum.
Fantastic places in Brooklyn. The library, the botanical garden, Prospect Park. It's so much there. I mean, I could go on and on and on.
Now, among the things that you do, among your talents, is that you also play instruments.
Yes.
Several of them. Bass, vibes, keyboards, percussion?
Yeah, I play bass, drums, keys. I can figure my way out on most instruments. I'm not good with any wind instruments at all. I tried to play the trumpet, and I quickly gave that up.
You know, a lot of people worry that because rap so often samples music, as opposed to having live musicians playing behind them, that...
I think that's a misconception.
Do you? Because a lot of people worry that young people aren't learning instruments
anymore. As a matter of fact, it is a misconception, because the Sugar Hill Gang is the seminal. I mean, there is no hip-hop without them, and that was a proper session band, as much as the Muscle Shoals session band or the Motown session band, all of those... Curtis Blow records, all of those Sugar Hill records that people hear are live musicians playing. The element of sampling is actually a phenomenon of the budgetary cutbacks in the school system. And when I was in public school as a grade schooler, and there were music programs that were there and that just mysteriously disappeared. And that creative impulse was still in the community, but there was no outlet for it. There were no places for young people to go to learn to play instruments, and parents could not afford to even do that for their children. So this generation made do with what was available, which was their parents' records, and they made their own songs or versions of those songs, because that was all that there was available. Nobody was saying, play this or play that. And in the mix of all of that, there was still a lot of me. What that created was connoisseurs. It created these young people who were becoming knowledgeable about music via the advent of sampling. So you would go to a guy's house, and these guys have hundreds and hundreds, and sometimes thousands. I know guys with thousands of records from everywhere, of every stripe and variation that you can imagine, because they're all, as Africa Vambaataa said, looking for the perfect beat, wherever that may be. And I've heard some of the most fantastic, exotic, obscure, amazing music in the basements and homes of hip-hop producers. And sampling is not as easy as people would imagine. But, you know, to quote Fidel Castro, had a great quote after he was captured in his first attempt to overthrow Batista. He's in his prison cell. He said, "History will absolve me." So whatever misconceptions that people have about the culture or its origins, before it's all done, people will understand it clearly. And I'm confident in that.
Well, listen, I want to congratulate you again on the Grammy and the Golden Globe nominations, and I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Thank you so much, Terry.
Mos Def co-stars in the new film The Woodsman. His latest CD is called The New Danger. Coming up, Dan Morgenstern, director of the Institute of Jazz Studies at Rutgers University. His reviews and essays are finally collected in a new book. This is Fresh Air.